Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to episode number 296 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Hello, once again, as I said previously in the intro from like 5 seconds ago, you were there, you heard it. This is episode number 296 of the Mighty Warriors Theme Marvel Podcast. I am your host, Bri Bri, the man who just witnessed the murder of an entire football team the previous night. RIP Pittsburgh Steelers. Joining me, as always, the man from down under, and by down under, I mean down under the sewers and the railway lines and everything else in that godforsaken city, New York City. That's Taser. Taser, welcome to the show. Yeah, you hear a lot of that, don't you? Also joining us from the great state of Texas? Benjamin, our OG, our fearless leader and founder, the marvelous Iggy. Benjamin, welcome to the show.
Carnage rules.
You know, there are days when I look at the current state of our world and think maybe a symbiote cult wouldn't be a bad alternative to our current leadership.
I would take a symbiote cult to our current administration any day right now.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, that's kind of the way I'm leaning to. Anyway, we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are the podcast that tackles all things Marvel, be it movies, TV show, comic books, toys, video games, everything. We are back with the first regular episode in a few weeks. The last episode we did was Spider-Man Far From Home, as timely as it ever was. And we're just going to dive right into it, basically, because in case you missed the news, it looks like Marvel Studios and Sony are going through a bad divorce right now. And Sony's keeping custody of the kid. From this point forward, there will be no more Tom Holland Spider-Man involvement in Marvel Studios.
Production. Yay! Yay!
The news came literally like the day before we posted our episode featuring the review of Far From Home. And there were some big bombshells dropped there. If you haven't listened to it, go back and check it out. But there was apparently a disagreement over how much of the producing costs, I think it was, that Sony and Marvel Studios would each be leveraging in a co-production. And Marvel's demands, I guess, were greater than what Sony was willing to sacrifice for the character, seeing as how, you know, Marvel and Disney make all the fucking money. So, yeah, Sony kind of took their ball and went home. Can't honestly say I blame them, but we'll get into that in a second. Both sides have commented since then. Kevin Feige saying that, you know, Spider-Man was never meant to be like a permanent fixture in the Marvel Studios productions, whereas Sony has gone on to say the door is definitely closed, at least for now, in terms of featuring Spider-Man in any ongoing productions. All things being equal, we've gone over Phase 4 from Marvel Studios, and none of it is explicitly to feature Spider-Man, so they won't have to deal with that at least for a few more years, but it'll be interesting to see how things pan out, considering they were apparently trying to set Tom Holland up as probably the keystone figure moving forward. But I also assume that now with the way they're producing things, it'll be easier than ever to kind of gloss over his absence. So we'll see how that goes. But that being said, Benjamin, I often go to you first on these because you are the OG Spidey fan. You love Peter Parker. I'm just curious what your take on this whole thing is, in terms of what you feel of Tom Holland's performance as Spider-Man and what it sort of means to the MCU and how you think they'll function without him.
Fuck Spider-Man.
Hey, Spider-Man, cool. Yeah, perfect. Thanks. No, but seriously, what are your thoughts on it?
Fuck Spider-Man. Okay, for real. I mean, it sucks. Like, it's so fucking stupid that they couldn't. Like, you would think like companies would be able to just fucking find a way to make a deal when like, hey, we made a lot of money. Let's make more money together. Maybe I'm just being simple and like not thinking of a broad scale like Disney and Sony are, but it's like, I like, come on, even if it's not fuck the fans, do it for the fucking money. But whatever. Besides, they'll come crawling back when they're when the second Venom movie doesn't do nearly as well as the first one, because the first one was a fluke. I'll fully say that. That first Venom, the how it succeeded, was a fucking fluke. There's no way it repeats that same thing twice. And when they try to do like their other spin-offs like they did with Amazing Spider-Man 2 after that, remember how that turned out? Then we got Spider-Man in the MCU. So they'll come crawling back, and they'll be the ex who wouldn't admit they were wrong, and then they admit that they're wrong. That's how it'll go. Or either that, or Disney will just fucking buy them out like they've bought everybody else out, and then we'll be living under. And then Disney will just buy the presidency for Donald Trump. So 2020 is not even gonna be an election; it's just gonna be Mickey Mouse as the president of the United States. I mean, it sucks. If one thing it's like, and especially how they I don't know. I mean, they didn't really set him up as the main. As the hero of the MCU, we don't even know who that is. We don't even know what the status of the Avengers is in the post-Endgame. We don't know anything.
That's very true.
Like, you know, maybe they did the whole, you know, revealing his secret identity as a way of like, well, at least we can write that. Well, he's in hiding because his identity got exposed and never refer to him by name, but we all know who he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But it just sucks. Like, you know, he was great in... I mean, Homecoming was all right. Like, I think overall Tom Holland Spider-Man's a whiny bitch too much. A little bit too fucking whiny. Like, a little bit too fucking whiny. But, like, he was great in Endgame and the brief spots he had in Infinity War. Like, he was fantastic. But, you know, hey, there was an MCU before Spider-Man. And while we all kind of wanted him to be there, did perfectly fine without it. You know, and there's going to be an MCU after Spider-Man, and he'll probably be back in time when Galactus comes back. He's like, kid, I thought you were dead. Nah, I got better. There you go.
Hey, fair enough. And, I mean, there are a few things worse in this world as far as first world problems go than two multi-million dollar conglomerate companies in a pissing match over the rights to a fictional character.
Yeah, so. Like the Amazon being on fire.
Yeah, you know, that might be an issue, but who wants to talk about that when people are talking about storming Sony to get Spider-Man back? Y'all have way too much fucking time on your hands. Taser, you're next on the docket. As judging by your upright cheer, you know, when I initially brought the news down, I'm guessing you're not too brokenhearted about this news.
No, don't get me wrong. I liked, what's his name,
Tom Holland?
No, Tom Holland. I liked Tom Holland as Peter Parker, and I liked his version of Spider-Man. He wasn't my favorite.
I've seconded.
You know, stated plenty of times that I liked Andrew Garfield's version the best. But
I agree to disagree.
Fair enough. But I did enjoy it. I enjoyed Homecoming. I really enjoyed Homecoming, and. Well, we already did Far From Home, so you know how I felt about that. But,
indeed.
It's sad that, you know, things happened the way it did. I think that moving forward, I think Sony might have a clue how, you know, to better handle the franchise since... You know, nothing's.
They've studied under the master of Kevin Feige. They have been tutored in the ways.
I know what I think is they have, rather than treat each movie as if it's its own encapsulation and doesn't touch upon anything. Yeah, it's okay that you have something that's kind of fleshed out. So, you know, I'm not saying that it's going to be the Spideyverse now, and you know they're going to create. You know, a whole new franchise. I mean, that wouldn't be bad, but I'm not saying that they're not going to do it. I just think that they know that you don't have to keep everything as isolated as they did.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to see it go, because I enjoyed Spider-Man in the MCU. But, you know, if this leads to better Spidey solo stories that don't involve him being... fucking 15 years old? I'm good. Yeah, I'm good.
Fair enough. So, yeah, like Taser says, stay tuned for that highly anticipated Morbius movie starring Jared Leto.
He's probably going to bite people's necks as part of his maybe morbid.
You would think after the stuff that happened on Suicide Squad got out, people would just kind of stop hiring him for a little while. Like, he's method, but he's method in the worst fucking possible way.
Yeah, he's not even bank. Hold on. That's the thing.
With Suicide Squad, you can't really blame him because they obviously thought that this was what was the way to go. So I don't think that was
right. We're blaming him if he after Suicide Squad. Like, that's what we're saying.
The whole thing, that's some other shit. I don't know what happened there.
Dude's crazy in all the wrong ways.
Yeah. I will say that as far as this news goes, I was surprised, but I'm not overall disappointed. I do think that having had time to kind of get a peek behind the curtain in terms of how the Marvel Studios does things, I think Sony has a better understanding of how to manage a franchise. I think that the initial I know it remains to be seen, but call me optimistic.
Hold on now. It's not like the first three did awful. It's just that whatever they were doing with in the Amazing Spider-Man phase wasn't working. And I'll be perfectly honest, I don't know what wasn't working, but you know, I think it underperformed in some way, manner that they just couldn't catch it.
I think the first one was decent. The second one was where things really went off the rails with that franchise.
But I also think, you know, now that I think about it, I think also the second one, that's while Marvel is also doing its own movies. So I think fans are also kind of, there's some pushback there, like, yeah, but I want to see him in Marvel. You know, I want to see him over here. So,
yeah, because that was the thing with me. The initial reaction to me really got me upset because people were fucking freaking out. And, you know, like I said, they were parodying that stupid Area 51 meme saying, let's all storm Sony Studios and bring Spider-Man back. And I'm just like, you fucking morons. Like, okay, people were freaking out because they're like, now, no more Tom Holland, no more. No, Tom Holland is still under contract, as is the directors and the writers and the supporting characters. They're all still on. They were never under contract with Marvel. They were always under contract with Sony. So basically, you have everything there. The only thing you can't do is just reference anything from the MCU anymore. And that's, you know, not a small obstacle, but it is something that can be overcome, especially if you switch gears and focus more on Peter's own personal journey rather than his attachment to Mr. Tony Stark.
Yes. Which I do think you can do. We can make Peter his own his own smart person. You know, rather than somebody who's being pulled along on the coattails.
Yeah. Wow. He's like transitioning from a little boy to his young adult phase where he rebels against his parent and does everything on his own because he figures out he knows everything and is better or what have you.
And he also starts calling Aunt May May. Because I'm sorry, that bothered me. Really. Sorry.
Fair. Okay, save the nitpicks for the after show. I guess my main takeaway, like I said, is I have faith for Sony to try and get it right. The thing that they really need to do and exercise is fucking patience, because that is where things went off the rails, where studio involvement to the degree of inserting three different villains really threw off Spider-Man 3, and then you went in and immediately took in multiple villains into Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2. I thought that was the biggest
there
thing where they were trying to
watch. There was only one villain in Amazing Spider-Man 1. It was just
because you had the overarching thing of Norman Osborn and then the parents.
No, that doesn't count. No, I'm sorry. That's nitpicking.
Okay, fine. You know what? I'll stow that one. But then you cannot call me and say Amazing Spider-Man 2 did not have that
problem. No, that absolutely happened. I'm not calling in on that, but
fair enough.
He only fought the Lizard in the first movie.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, the sooner they try to jump the gun and introduce so many other people, the sooner the franchise goes off the rails. So that being said, I guess we'll just have to wait and see, because as I said, Marvel Studios is in a position now, and they have made it abundantly clear both at Comic-Con and the D23 Expo that occurred in Anaheim for Disney stockholders that they have hundreds of other things they are working on besides anything Spider-Man related. So I don't think they'll be hurting. And Sony obviously has their own vision of what they want. And they have, I feel like they have enough projects in production right now where they keep themselves busy for a little while. But
yeah, like Morbius.
Morbius.
Let's be real. They're doing this because they want to see Spider-Man and Venom again. That's the only reason they're doing this.
What do you mean?
Remember how they shoehorned Venom into Spider-Man 3 and like, well, now they can have Tom Holland and what's the guy's name who's playing Venom?
Tom Hardy. Tom.
My two Tom.
Tom.
They can have My Two Tom starring Sven and Vidi, a love story. There you go.
That'd be a man-boy love story, wouldn't it?
Okay. Well, he'll be older. He'll be of consent. Yeah, but, so I
mean, look, Tom Holland next to just about anybody is still man boy love.
That's true. He looks he will forever be a 15-year-old boy, no matter how old he gets.
Yeah, he's very baby faced. I mean, he's legal age now, and Thor had to buy him beers on the set off set because they wouldn't accept his ID. So we'll see how that goes. That's a true story too. You can look that up. Chris Hemsworth vouches for that. Anyway. Moving on to some additions to the Marvel Studios universe rather than takeaways. A couple spots of casting news. One as it pertains to Hawkeye on Disney Plus coming soon. The other pertaining to Captain Marvel 2. The first of which is pretty straightforward. It's that Hailee Steinfeld, a popular actress who most recently voiced Gwen Stacy in Into the Spider-Verse.
And she was the star in the Bumblebee movie that came out last December.
Was she?
Yes, that was her.
No shit. All right. Hey, fair enough. The only other live-action reference I have for her is True Grit. She was the little girl in True Grit, the reboot they did a few years ago.
Really?
That was her? Yeah.
Oh, snap, because that was actually, and for a Western, and I hate Westerns, that was a decent movie.
It was decent, wasn't it? So Hailee Steinfeld is being courted, perhaps, to take over the role of Kate Bishop in the Hawkeye Disney Plus series, which... honestly, I'm kind of for that. I dig Hailee Steinfeld as an actress. I think she's very talented. She's one of those does-everything type. She does the whole music thing, too. So she's a singer and actress and does all this other crap.
She's a performer.
She's Triple Threat. Hey.
Yeah, she's the Will Smith of the young non-black ladies. Never mind.
Sure, something like that, yeah. So she's being courted to join Hawkeye as Kate Bishop. And in addition to that, Captain Marvel 2, some plot details have allegedly leaked wherein it insinuates that they will introduce the character of Hulkling into Captain Marvel 2. Hulkling, for those of you unaware, is a young Avengers character who is the child of Captain Marvel, and a Skrull princess whose name admittedly escapes me, but he kind of has the best of both worlds. He has shape-shifting abilities, and also he is in an open, prominently homosexual relationship with Wiccan. Yes, also the Avengers. And the reason why I put those two together, obviously, is because in case you missed it, they're both roster members of the Young Avengers, which is a franchise near and dear to not only my heart, but also Arnold A-Train Alfred's heart. Arnold, if you're listening, we love you. Hi.
Not the A-Train from The Boys. Not that A-Train.
Not that A-Train. This A-Train's good. He's a good guy. Yeah, and he loves Young Avengers.
Although, have you ever seen our A-Train and A-Train?
Oh,
in the
shit.
Same room at the same time.
Oh, shit. Man, I don't think we should be talking about this on a recorded episode. We could end up in serious trouble.
Well, hold on. Look, if anybody in that whole A-Train universe is going to be killing anybody, it's probably Gabe, okay? I don't think we got to worry about A-Train. Gabe is the one that we have to worry about.
Oh, man. We have to make sure they listen to this episode.
Love you, Gabe.
But yeah. Yeah, so we see the building of a potential Young Avengers property as well, which excites me greatly, as I'm a huge fan of that. And this could obviously go on to include Scott Lang's daughter, Cassie, over in Ant-Man and the Wasp, depending on if they, take her character and run with it. That's kind of all there is for that little bit, but I just kind of want to get your read on, guys. Have either of you been up on the Young Avengers much? Do either of you kind of buy into that series?
I've read a few of them, like Children's Crusade and... I think it might have been the one before.
That's the last time that they were like a team, wasn't it? I know they had an ongoing for like a little bit, but they've been like that team.
Yeah, admittedly, they have all been off doing their own thing. There is that. So,
like the Runaways have seemingly taken back that spot of Marvel's hip young team again, and the Young Avengers are kind of just like, we're in the ether. And we don't really matter anymore.
Now that I think about it, wasn't Patriot in that Marvel animated thing with
That's a different Patriot. And I can explain that to you off air, but just take me at my word. It's a different Patriot.
Okay. So. It's not a black guy.
It is a black guy.
I think he's Afro Latino or something to those lines. Thing. Like
he's Haitian, that's all you gotta say.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, fuck.
He's Afro-Caribbean.
Sure, let's go with that.
And he has a flying shield. Flying shield in effect. Woo!
Look, We're going to sit here. We can get into talking about his really white suit, or we can kind of move on with the topic.
Yeah, as long as it's not suit, pointed at I the mean, top you know,
of it. Just kind of saying.
Yeah. Okay, so either of you big, I mean, I know I'm really kind of in the minority here, I guess, but I mean, did either of you like what you read with those characters? Because here's the thing with me also, and I raised this point on our Facebook page, was that how they're going to introduce Hulkling kind of befuddles me, because in case you missed it, Mar-Vell isn't Mar-Vell in Mar-Vell's the MCU. Yeah.
So it'll be his mother instead of his father.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Well, then who,
you know?
Ooh, they should make the dad
the
Super Skrull.
Scandal on Kree-Lar when they learned that Mar-Vell had sex with a Skrull. Ooh.
Yeah, that means that she could have it any way she wanted it.
They should definitely make Super Skrull the dad. Now that I just said that, I want that to happen.
Oh my god, that would be.
No, they'll make Super Skrull a mom. And Mar-Vell a mom.
Skrulls really don't have a gender, do they? Because they can be whatever the fuck they want.
No, they do have a gender.
They do have
but
a gender.
In the movies, they don't need it because diversity. That way, everybody wins.
I thought you were leading into just she transmutes a dick onto herself or something like that. And she shapeshifts her nether regions and it's like, look at this dick.
Consider
whatever a Skrull genitalia looks like.
That's true.
Hey, they look
it turns
exactly
out she has like a
like
stinger or something.
They look exactly
okay, we're delving
like
into
target.
Hentai territory. I'm going to back off that.
But no, I mean, honestly, you could make some small changes and it fits, you know, sadly enough, because, I mean, it's bad enough that they made Mar-Vell a female and, you know, whatever. But if you want to use Hulkling and you want to still have them be the child of Mar-Vell, and then you just have them, you know, born by a male Skrull or a female Skrull, saying this, you know, female Skrulls can, you know, make working male genitalia. And bada bing, bada boom. Or they could just, you know, sci-fi in a test tube some bullshit. There's always some kind of sciencey bullshit that they can come up with to get that to work. So that's, you know, that's not hard. You know, and if anything, while inwardly I am still kind of cringing, I kind of want to see how they pull it off. You know, you want to see how... If there's going to be a car accident, exactly how bad the car accident is going to be. And if there's no car accident, fine, there's no car accident. I'll just wait for the next car accident, that's all.
Oh, my goodness. All right. And, yeah, so, that's what's happening in Young Avengers world. Also happening on more of a cosmic scale is something that I might be a little more painful to talk about just because we have to acknowledge something having existed that was not good. Marvel Television, I should say, because they are, for all intents and purposes, separate entities. Marvel Television attempted not too long ago to bring the Inhumans to the
screen. What are you talking about?
I could have sworn they did.
It never... No.
Okay, let me frame it this way.
Diversity now! Diversity now!
I got the Mephisto memo, damn it. It never happened.
Look, Mephisto in my room over here. He's giving me the thumbs up that I can talk about it. Can we just break the fourth wall for a second here? And
hold it. I'm just gonna say this: if in what the hell? Who the hell are we talking about again?
Well, let me finish the damn news story,
well,
and you'll find out. There we go.
Up. God.
Okay, long story short, Marvel is going to reboot the Inhumans for the MCU.
There we go.
Yay, there it is. So that's the long and short of it. And as you know, in case you missed it, they tried it not too long ago. Didn't really work out the way anybody had hoped or intended.
Black Bolt got beat up by the cops.
Yeah. Reportedly, it's not going to happen anytime soon, but with the further establishment of the cosmic side of Marvel with Captain Marvel 2 and the Celestials and the Eternals and all that, I suppose it was only a matter of time before they got back around to rebooting the Inhumans again.
We were supposed to get an Inhumans movie.
We were supposed to, and then things between Kevin Feige and Donald Trump's favorite guy, Ike Perlmutter, kind of took a turn, and, you know... that sort of went away, or it became a project that I think was shot and edited in inside of 6 weeks. I think it was. So
that's being generous.
Fucking A, 6 weeks, and two of those weeks were for the first episode. So fucking hell.
So yeah, are we acknowledging that Inhumans happened? Yes.
Only in the sense that we are now looking forward to something that could potentially be far, far greater and potentially okay. realize the scale and scope of what the Inhumans should be. Marvel Television and Marvel Ultimate Alliance, the Black Order. I'm looking at you. Because in case you missed it, Ben and I have been playing that on our own private time, and boy, that that level is disappointing.
So, only introduces Thane. That's the only purpose of that all.
Fucking A, if it didn't need to introduce a less important character to the overall narrative. Mm. So, Taser, you and I witnessed the monstrosity that is the Inhumans. Ben, did you watch the Inhumans? I don't remember if you did or not. I think
No.
Okay, yeah, we spared you from that. Okay.
You didn't spare shit. I just said I wasn't going to watch it.
Yeah, that's fair. And our weakening resolve and our tortured memories each week, I think, only reinforced your decision. Come to think of it, I don't remember having watched any of... Is that what we bargained for Mephisto for, to forget ever having watched that series? Any specifics of it?
You assholes did.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I own my soul. I get it. Taser, how do you feel about this, I suppose? You know, having seen what we've seen.
I would just assume... It not show up again for another 5 to 10 years.
It doesn't look like it will. There's no definitive date on this.
And if we're going to do that, then can we also do that with Defenders and Iron Fist?
You know, can we keep Charlie Cox as Daredevil?
Yes, we keep Charlie Cox as Daredevil. I'm allowing Power Man, you know, Luke Cage to stick around, although, if somebody wants to call over, you know, my man Terry, I'm not going to be upset. And, you know what? Punisher. Because I'll say it. I like what's-his-name as Punisher. So, you know, move him into the movies. I'm good to go. That guy who played Danny. Yeah. That show didn't happen.
Yeah.
Show didn't happen. No. Yeah. Good God, no. Oh, yeah. And, yeah, Jessica. Bye, Jessica. Sorry. Bye, Jessica. Goodbye. Bye. She gets knocked out.
Oh, and
get Shadowverse.
Wilson Fisk. Get Vincent Dorito back as Wilson Fisk as well, and it'll all be good.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
That. Just basically preserve Daredevil, and then you can kind of just... You can do everything else over if you want to. And then,
just
you know...
Matt Murdock in the next Spider-Man. Oh.
Damn.
Hey, at least we're getting Moon Knight. Shit, we didn't even talk about that. Fuck,
Shitty consolation prize you get when you don't get the first. That's what that is. You wanted the big giant bear.
Shit, we didn't even talk about. Pig. Fuck. Okay, calling an audible. Okay, we're switching gears right now. At the D23 Expo, Kevin Feige announced Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, She-Hulk, and Moon Knight for Disney Plus streaming. Ben, I'm assuming you have feelings about these things.
Yeah, it's super dope. The She-Hulk one is cool because I think they've already said her origin is going to be the same, where she gets the blood transfusion with Bruce. That means Mark Ruffalo is going to be in this.
Woo! Everyone's cool. Favorite, Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah. All I'm saying is, look, don't make her depressed She-Hulk. Don't make her the current state where she's like Hulk, basically. Make her, like, listen, I'm not going to lie. I want to get a boner when I see She-Hulk, a tall green lady who can stop me. When I see this show, I want to see that. I'm gonna be straight up honest with y'all. She had She-Hulk was like sex appeal for Marvel for the longest time, you know.
What so was like, the show back in the day? Was it Ally McBeal? Was that it with that the lawyer?
There was a
yeah,
lawyer
I think
show.
That was it.
She
was
that. Like it's just like She-Hulk, Jennifer Walters. There's a certain attitude about her that like that's why a lot of people like her outside
confidence.
Of you know the fact.
She-Hulk,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, She-Hulk was confident, and also, she wasn't, like arrogantly you. Confident. She was confident up to a point without making you feel small.
Yeah.
And that
she's
right
the complete opposite of her cousin.
Yeah. But also,
seriously, she stayed
person, you know, and I think that was part of the problem too, because Jennifer Walters was a well-rounded person. All she did was go green and grow, and also gain super strength. But like, her personality didn't change a whole lot.
No, she was still Jen Walters.
Yeah, and that was actually one of the best things about her character. You know, she didn't change a whole lot. But then, you know, like, what was it? The 2000s hit, and you find out she's boning Juggernaut, and she slept with Starfire.
Yeah, they made her into a whore for some reason. I never...
Because sex!
Yeah.
What they really need to do, and they probably won't have the...
partners that she wants, but it's like, they went overboard with it. Like, she slept with everybody. I'm like, really, guys? Come on, you don't have to fucking do that.
Yeah, they
what they need to do is they need, and they won't, I doubt they'll have the balls for it. They need to make her break the fourth wall before Deadpool gets his grimy mitts all over at the rights, because I think that'd be kind of rad.
So you want it to be like John Byrne's run on the book?
I mean, is that a bad thing, necessarily?
It depends.
No, but the only reason they did that was, like, because at that point she had been around, what, for at least a decade? Because she was one of the last characters Stan Lee ever created, so...
And she was also... Her villains were also a bit comical. So, you know...
It all depends on what kind of show you want. Because the easiest thing they would do would just make it a lawyer show.
If it was if it was like that, though, like say
they could
like
do Alan what Gale. They did with Iron Fist and make it Suits, but with superheroes.
Why do you... Why? Why do you... That's the other thing Mephisto told us not to bring up, and yet you bring it up.
I'm sorry. Misery loves company.
They'll make it like The Practice.
Nah.
And that took place in Boston, too, if I remember correctly.
I think it did.
Yeah, so, Brian, that should be right up your alley. As a matter of fact, so did Alan McBeal, too. Because that was written by, what, David E. Kelly?
Yes, Alan McBeal.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Correct.
I watch both shows. That's why I know.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah. Also, Boston Public. That was my favorite.
Fair enough. And God damn it if Keanu Reeves is not perfect for everything, but...
Would you have
Mark
him play Spector, Captain America?
Moon Knight. Do it.
Kamala Khan, though, that's pretty cool.
That is pretty fucking cool.
Nah.
Maybe she'll become the new focus character at Peter's high school because allegedly she was already
Spider-Man.
Enrolled.
We got Miss Marvel.
Nah.
there you go.
Someone asked her about Peter Parker, and she's like, who the fuck's Peter Parker?
You know what wouldn't be bad, though? If they do Kamala Khan, have her go to the same high school as Peter Parker.
I mean, they can't
Oh, she
now.
Does. The actress they cast, I think, is the same actress they have had. If you saw Far From Home, there was a hijab-wearing woman in the show.
That's supposed
I
to
believe
be Kamala?
That is, I think it's supposed to be. I'm not entirely certain about that. It might have
that
been.
Would be
there's
cool.
No way. There's no way that happened.
I mean, why not? You know? I think that would be pretty cool. She doesn't have to necessarily meet up with Spider-Man, but I think it would, be pretty cool to have her. You know, I don't know if she actually lives in Queens. I just think that.
No, she doesn't. She's from New Jersey.
Oh, huh, fuck.
Okay. Oh wow.
Yeah,
okay.
She's from Jersey.
The only more intolerable people than New Yorkers, New Jerseyans.
Like that's what like because I think I'm the only fool, not fool, but the only person who read her run. Like that's what made her run feel like interesting and fun was because
it wasn't New York.
It wasn't New York. It was a smaller thing, and her villains were fun. It wasn't like, and when she got introduced to big shit, it felt like it mattered versus like Spider-Man, where he was dealing with big shit all the time. So like, I mean, she could, you know, she could always move to New Jersey, you know, that's not an issue. But like,
well, no,
you know,
I mean, if her origin takes place in Jersey, I say started in Jersey, and if anything. I would want it to be in Jersey because it's not New York. Everything doesn't have to start and run in New York.
I mean,
the
first phase of the MCU, we didn't see New York till the Avengers. Or
no,
technically
Captain America, so, you know.
That's at the very end, though. But, like, the
movie's
like
all
beginning. It starts off in Brooklyn. What are you, stupid?
Well, 1940s Brooklyn, though.
Yeah,
it's still
New
York City. What?
You know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I fucking mean.
Hey. But as you will. Kamala Khan, I'm not calling for it. Kamala Khan doesn't really move me. It's nice to have her as a character. I'm all for you know, the differences, and she seems to be well-liked, and I'm not hating. So, you know, people who are looking forward to seeing her, fine. You know, I still want Power Pack. Give me Power Pack. That's what I want.
And what would be fun is that, because, like, in the comics, she's, like, the super nerd fan.
Yeah,
and
she
given
is.
That
didn't she write fan fiction?
Yeah, she writes fan fiction. She, you know, she's a nerd for superheroes. She loves superheroes.
Oh,
so that
my.
Would be perfect in, like, well, obviously in the MCU, there's gonna be a person like that who's super obsessed with superheroes.
Well, yeah,
and then this
Spider-Man.
Person happens to get superpowers.
Actually, I was gonna say Coulson.
Yeah,
there you
okay,
go. Yeah,
yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah, but he doesn't exist anymore after Avengers 1 either. So.
You know who would make?
He died.
You know who wouldn't
no,
make
he
for
died.
An interesting
he's,
crossover?
He's, He
no,
didn't show
no,
up.
No, no, not that's not true.
He was in the end game.
Season
he wasn't in that portal.
Season 7 is coming to ABC.
Yeah,
he wasn't in the. Was he in the portal scene? No, because his bitch ass was 6 feet under. Kinetical. There you go. Boom.
Wow. Okay. Moving on.
You know
I didn't
who...
see Linda May coming out of that portal.
Anyway, you know who
well, I mean, that
Kamala Khan reminds me of? If they ever do a Marvel DC crossover. Kamala Khan and Static.
Yeah,
Kamala Khan and Static
would
because they're an exact same kind of person, except just different sexes and powers.
Here's what I want from the very first episode of Ms. Marvel. I want it to open with an Avengers battle scene with Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans, and then as they get on a rooftop and share their feelings, they kiss, and it turns out it's a scene Ms. Marvel is writing for her fan fiction. That is how I want the series to begin.
That would be
as
so...
in, they just start full-on macking, and it turns – someone, like, knocks on her door, like, Kamala, you're late for school, or something like that, you know? Something like what Kuhan's parents do to him. So, you know, that's...
Oh, wow.
Like
well, you know, I'm sure that, you know, the alphabet community would fucking go nuts over it, without a doubt. You know, I would sit there going, But then, you know, I'd be hoping that Captain Marvel and, you know, name any other female kiss, so I you know,
right.
I got no leg to stand on.
Fair enough. Yeah, and I'll spare the details. I have to say that I'm super excited about Moon Knight, and I hope they do him right. I hope they do him right and do it well. And go, so help me if it gets canceled as the episode is loading, I'm gonna fucking murder somebody.
You know
there
what?
You, go,
you know
Johnny,
what? What's gonna happen is it's gonna be a tax issue, like my thing with Swamp Thing. It's gonna get canceled before the first episode even shows.
Fuck.
But here's the difference: it's fucking Disney. If that shit happens, like I'll fucking write a bigger check. There you go.
Seriously, they'll just buy the state of North Carolina and be like, "Yeah, we're good. Go on now. Shoo. Bye."
I still want Power
we
Pack.
You.
Yeah. Well, maybe one day we'll get Power Pack. They're doing kid-friendly stuff now too. It'll probably be a kids' cartoon or something like that.
No, I want a live-action Power Pack. Fuck the kid-friendly.
Well, you're not going to get to that yet, but I'll tell you what you will get to do, Taser. You're going to get to go first because we're moving on to individual reviews, and you reviewed Marvel number 1000. So. Talk about it.
Yay! It had 4 digits in the title.
Woo!
Well, okay. And I know Iggy's gonna agree with this.
See that, DC? We can do a number 1000 issue too.
Yay!
See that?
We can do it. We can do it also. Whatever you can do, I can do better. Marvel 1000. Marvel Comics 1000 is Marvel's attempt at creating old history and trying to creating backstory, and it's the end of the 2010s version of Century. You know, oh yeah, this thing kind of existed, you know, because of a book that was in Stan Lee's desk drawer that somebody discovered after 50 fucking yeah okay whatever. I will say this, Ewing?
Yes.
Okay. He does not a bad job of threading this through Marvel history, because he starts everything off all the way back in 39. Okay? Which is first appearance of the original Human Torch, the android, who would later on become Vision, or he would be the prototype for Vision, or however you want to look at that. And men who would later on become, they called themselves the 3Xs, but would later on become the Enclave. You know, the guys who would take and build her, Kismet, and Adam Warlock. And they're after this mask because way back in the Jungle Deep, way further back during Sir Percy, who's the Black Knight, during his day, there was a mask that was created by a bunch of warlocks, and when worn, makes the wearer the equal of whoever it is he's facing. So it doesn't make you better than, but it makes you their equal, so you have a 50-50 chance. Which, let's say you're facing the Hulk, could be handy.
yeah, no shit.
Especially
if that's a sliding scale where as he gets more powerful, so do you.
Exactly. So. So he spins his tail, and he goes back to, like, the three X's. Their first appearance was Mystic Comics number one in 1940. And he pulls it in at, like, other years, you know. What is it? Like, the year of the All-Winner Squad, the year that they show up, and
is that the one with the Wizard in it?
Yeah.
Is the Wizard there?
Yeah. And he creates characters and kills them off. And 1941, young Cap sees him. And I hate this story because it gives validation to the whole Hydra Cap thing. I fucking hate it, but it's done. Screw it, move on. As Cap's being taken to the house where he's indoctrinated, he sees the three X's, excuse me, and this guy who I guess they managed to take and compelled to wear the mask called the Thunderer, who was an actual character, not Lee Kung the Thunderer from Iron Fist fame, but the first person to be called the Thunderer, who they later changed the name to the Dark Avenger, and then that guy gets killed, and some dude who loses an eye, and he's called Blind Justice, and he wears the mask, and the character from, what was it, Agents of Atlas, Jimmy Woo, who I don't know anything about, because I didn't read Agents of Atlas, he ends up picking the trail, and he starts searching for them, and he interviews Namora, Sunspot, Marvel Boy, Gorilla Man, and this is at different parts of his lifetime, because Jimmy Woo is actually kind of an old character. Marvel Boy is definitely an old character, but Sunspot, who becomes Citizen V, did you guys know that?
No, I did not read up on. I didn't really keep track of his goings on.
I know Sunspot ended up buying, what was it, Hive? No, not Hive. Roxxon, I think.
AIM.
AIM, thank you, AIM. But in this one, they said he's calling himself Citizen V. And, okay, that's news. But Namora, that's Namor's mom. And Gorilla Man, that's another old character. But he also, converses with Night Thrasher and the Blue Marvel. See, why doesn't the Blue Marvel have a Marvel movie, huh? Huh? What about that diversity, huh?
It's because he's blue. Blue people don't get movies in this day and age.
Boo, that sucks. But anyway, yeah. it threads through this man's life, and he's looking for, and they're trying to keep tabs of, whoever it is that's in possession of the mask, and we come to find out that the mask is, it holds a slice of eternity. Mystical. Whoa. And the mask apparently has found a new user, calling themselves Knight Rider or Dark Rider, some crap like that. That's the one central theme to the book. Everything else is like first appearance of Red Wolf, first appearance of She-Hulk.
Some nice tributes to other teams and characters. Some things.
And not everybody gets a tribute. They don't do like first appearance of Iron Man or
which is odd. It's really fucking odd.
Well,
they don't.
Iron Man gets two. He gets one where it shows a breakdown of his armor until it gets all the way down to like him, and then he's broken down, and I don't know what the fuck to think about that one. But then there's another one where they show the first time, I think it's the first time Doctor Doom and Iron Man face each other, and Doctor Doom manages to get whatever he gets, and he gets gone, and it shows how, haha, I am triumphant. Meanwhile, Tony goes home, and he's got teammates and a woman that he can go to bed with. Meanwhile, Doom goes home, and he just has his victory. You know, interesting contrast there. And they do a lot of other things, like with Hercules. And it's the Hercules from that 80s future miniseries, where it's like Hercules and like
good
the...
Lord.
Actually, that was a fun run.
That was that Mark Waid? Mark Waid's usually the only one who remembers bullshit like that.
I don't remember if that was Mark Waid that did that part. But
whatever. Who cares?
It was... But it was fun to see them actually acknowledge it. And rather than actually get into the meat of how they were introducing him, because they actually have his partner Recorder in this, and Recorder's constantly telling him, you're about to talk about Thor again. He's like, it's not about Thor. And, well, you better hurry up because, you know, you're running out of time. And he starts going on to this long ramble, and then he drops, you know, something about Thor, and then he runs out of time. And they do the same thing with Deadpool. And it was actually pretty damn funny. They have, like, Jason Aaron does something. They have Walt Simonson does a page for Iron Man. And actually, I liked his piece. What's his name? Tom DeFalco and Ron Frenz do a Thor page. And that made me feel like a kid again when I loved comics. It was fucking awesome. I did. There was a lot here that, you know, looking over it just, you know, made me smile, because a lot of it was shit I didn't read, because we're talking the 40s and 50s. I wasn't around. But when we start hitting like 80 and on, I'm like, yeah. Not so much from 95 to about 2008, because I wasn't touching Marvel then. But, you know, I didn't do so until Iggy came up with this project here. But even then, there's still stuff that I knew about, and I'm, yeah, all right, this is actually kind of cool. And that's the greater part of it. But like I said, Al Ewing, he has this one story, this one narrative worming through, you know, looking for the three X's, a.k.a. the Enclave, and, you know, what's up with this mask. And the end of it all, at one point you get something from Eternity. I mean, not Eternity, excuse me, Uatu the Watcher, talking about how one of the saddest things that he comes across is how much humanity worries about stuff because of our limited lifespan. And Eternity has a thing where, God, I can't even remember what the hell he talks about. I think he just talks about the nature of things. But we see the person who has the mask, and then we see what happened to the old Enclave and what they've been working on. And they're working on Korvac.
Dun, dun, dun.
I mean, wow, that's kind of something there. And I know Iggy's not too thrilled with it. You know, he's already rang the bell, and I can't say he's entirely wrong, but I'm kind of interested to see where it leads, you know? Because this Korvac isn't going to be exactly the same as the one from, you know, the past. First of all, it's a different universe. But I'm interested to see what they do with it, and how the mask ties into everything. I'm intrigued. You know, it looks like it's an interesting MacGuffin. Hopefully they won't treat it the same way they did Freedom Ring. hopefully they won't treat it the same way they treated what's his name? Sentry, who's still dead. Even though
he's still alive again. Yeah, he had a series and it just went away, but he came back in Doctor Strange like about 2 years ago.
I see that was in Doctor Strange. I wasn't reading it.
But yeah, okay, Doctor Strange enough. Brought him back.
Okay, all right, fair enough. So yeah, I this might lead to something interesting that might be worth reading. So I love this book. You know, this, if I'd paid for it, I would have, it would have been money well worth spent, you know. And one other thing that I loved, aside from the what's his name who does all those DC covers, he does the painted DC covers.
Alex Ross.
Alex Ross. He did a a Hulk page, and that shit was awesome. That was totally funny.
He does Marvel covers. Who the fuck are you kidding, well, Alex Ross?
I think he's more well known for
his if DC it's painted, covers. It's usually Alex Ross. But
anyway, there's the one page where they do a memoriam of actually both DC and Marvel creators who passed, and at the top, and it's like it's five columns of names of men and some women who have worked in comics and died off, most of them men, but at the top is Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, and Steve Ditko. At the bottom of the page is, I think this was the back cover for the death of Captain Marvel, and it's, you know, a bunch of heroes who were popular at the time standing before a memorial of a planet with a ring around it. And that's the symbol that Mar-Vell had on his uniform when he first makes an appearance. I love
that's
this.
Rad.
It's something I can applaud, you know? I mean, they've got Gardner Fox on this list, Joe Simon, Joe Kubert, fucking, you know, what's his name? Mark Gruenwald. You know, these are guys that I read when I was a kid, you know? So as a nod of respect, Jerry Siegel. Jerry Siegel's on this list, you know?
Wow.
As a nod of respect, I love this one page here. So, yeah, I would definitely call this book worth picking up, you know? If I was to give it a Warrior rating, I'd make it 4.3 Warriors out of 5. Worth the money.
That's rad. That's rad. Just as an aside to that, because we'd spoken about it earlier and in the show itself, but the Young Avengers stuff was the brief there with Alan Heinberg and Jim Chung teaming back up for that was great. And in addition to that, I don't, Taser, you obviously get your comics through other means. but I will say that the amount of variant covers you got to pick through and choose from for this series were so fucking good. I opted for the Ron Lim cover with Thanos, Adam Warlock, Silver Surfer, and all the Avengers Ooh. Therein who kind of existed around that era. They even have, you can see in the corner, they have X-Factor version of Cyclops hanging out there. Nice. Like, that is, and not only that, but it has the classic Big M Marvel Comics logo in the corner. So that was just a little chef's kiss. I'm just, mwah,
the,
brilliant. Well done.
The one page in the back where it shows, all of the people that worked on this, you know, the writers,
yes.
the pencilers, the color artists, the letters, the cover, Alex Ross, his own cover, Kerry Andrews' own cover, Mark Brooks, Mike Allred and Laura Allred, Ron Lemon, Israel Silva, Clayton Crane, Inhyuk Lee, J. Scott Campbell. Holy shit. McGinnis and Val Staples. George Perez and Jason Keith.
George Perez came out of retirement for this one. Hell
My
fucking yeah.
My God. Joe Quesada, Kevin Nolan, and Richard Isenoff? I don't know that last name. Scotty Young. There was, I think, what? We're talking 12 to 15 covers? Cause I'm looking
yeah, something
at,
like that. Yeah,
yeah
they had a ton
Mark Bagley
of fucking covers
and
Eshinov.
Holy shit, man! So yeah, if anything, I would love to see somebody collect all of them and put them, at, you know, in a, like a nice big collection. All the covers at the back end of a collected thing. Just wow, man! This was a good book. You know, I'm sorry. I like this. You know, I like something that, you know, it pulls and it tries to work with the legacy. You know,
indeed.
I hope they do it. I hope they do a good job in building it. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Well, time will tell, sir. Time will tell.
And that being said, Benjamin, you're next on the chopping block. And I mean that in sort of a figurative sense, but also literally, because you'll be reviewing Absolute Carnage for us. The event that's kind of taken everybody by surprise in terms of how good it is, question mark? Why don't you take it and run with it there, Benny boy?
Do you believe in God?
Oh, boy. Now, this discussion, I get this magic at Christmas every year. All right, so, let's dive in.
So this is Absolute Carnage. This is the event that's barely been building since Donny Cates started his Venom run, which is a year ago, which I did not read, although I did pick the first volume at my comic book store's Labor Day sale, so haven't read it yet, but they're Marvel trades. They're short. I can read it in about an hour.
Indeed.
But, I had heard about this, and I'm like, huh. Okay, whatever, dismissed it. And then I read a miniseries called Silver Surfer Black, which, because they do a Silver Surfer miniseries every few years.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. Silver Surfer's in another dimension, or actually he time travels to the past. And the final page of that issue was this ominous-looking figure in black armor, and he has Venom Spider-Man crest, and he goes, I am Null, and you will call me a god. I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, and then my I don't know who this guy was. I was like, who the fuck is this guy? And apparently, that is Null, the god of the symbiotes. In the sense that he is the one who created the symbiotes race. And eons ago, he basically was like a war chief across the galaxy.
Interesting.
Until his symbiotes basically said, nah, fuck you, and revolted. And I know a couple years ago they did an arc, I think Bendis even did it, where there was a planet of the symbiotes. Apparently it's not a planet. So this is a kind of a retcon, but it's Venom, so who cares?
Yeah.
That it's not a planet made of symbiote. It's a planet. It's basically the whole planet is symbiotes that are basically acting as a prison for Null. And Null is in the prison asleep, waiting to be woken up again. So he's not dead. Null is kind of like the big boogie bad in the background. Carnage is sort of the focal point. There was a one-shot issue came out in December, which I was able to grab somehow at my comic book store, where basically kind of shows how Cletus Kasady plays into play, how it comes into part, in that this cult of Null basically finds Cletus Kasady after being in space and being jettisoned back into reality, captures him, and what they basically make a discovery is that everybody who's touched the symbiote is part of a living codex. So the symbiote just doesn't adapt to your personality, it also takes pieces of it with you. So basically what the idea is that they have a symbiote that I think was original, that was from Null or something. And so they plan is to inject Cletus Kasady with the symbiote that was connected to Null. And basically it's Null, and they want to use it to talk to, not only to talk to their god Null, but to wake his ass up. So that's their goal. And Cletus Kasady has kind of been their avant-garde kind of thing. And so Absolute Carnage is basically Carnage making his move. He gets a whole new redesign. He's much scarier than he's been before. He's still murder, but in a much more intimidating way. So basically Absolute Carnage is about them trying to get all the symbiotes or anybody who's been in contact with the symbiote and reabsorb them so they can give a physical form to Null again and wake him up again, and so he can wage war on the universe again. And that puts, and of course Eddie Brock's in right in the middle of it, because of course the Venom symbiote. Eddie has a son.
Does.
Yeah, Eddie has a son because apparently the symbiote manipulated his memories to thinking he didn't. And the kid is hanging around him, but he thinks Eddie's his older brother, not his father. Because Eddie's being an idiot, because he always is being a stubborn idiot. I think I read it because I was in a horror mood. Obviously, we talked about it before the show started, but It Chapter 2 came out, like, and basically my comic store guy basically is like, oh, yeah, it's a horror story, or it's a superhero horror story. And I was like, well, that's interesting. So I read it, and it's generally, like, it's not super scary or anything like that, but it's generally creepy. It's written like a horror novel. There's a lot of tension in the air. There's a lot of violence. Carnage gets a really cool redesign where he doesn't look like a Spider-Man Venom ripoff. He's more arachnic in a way. He has like these pincers coming out of his back. He has no abdomen. It's just his like the spine thing made of his flesh, and he can also turn people into Carnage symbiotes like him. So he can infect others and turn it into him. And the first issue ends with them going to a prison, and that where Norman Osborn is, because I didn't know this because I wasn't reading Dan Slott's trash writing, but apparently in the final arc of Dan Slott's run, I had seen the pages. Oh, he's the Red Goblin, so I just went like, oh, he just fucking turned his costume red. Fucking stupid writing. But no, apparently Osborn was crazy enough to inject himself with the Carnage symbiote, and that fucked with him so much. He thinks he's Cletus Kasady now.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, he's that fucking crazy now. And so much that Carnage, like Cletus Kasady, Carnage is basically like, no, I'm fucking Cletus Kasady, you motherfucker. And also the Maker is in this. Like, he's helping Eddie Brock.
What?
Yeah, the Maker.
Seriously?
Yeah. I knew it because of that stupid-ass helmet and the speech bubbles. Yeah, the Maker's in this.
Holy shit. Okay, well, now this book is really on my radar. I got to go fucking check this out now because holy shit.
Yeah, it doesn't play a big role, but, like, apparently he's been helping Venom or Eddie for a while now. Basically, he figured out a machine that can help, like, you know, remove the symbiote from it, from people. But, like, I don't know, man. Like, because I you guys know me. I was on a hate boner for Carnage for the longest time.
Oh, yeah, you did hate him, man.
You know, and even – and Venom is a – take it or leave him. It takes a certain person for me to read Venom. But I just like this idea of that there's, like, this entity that created the symbiotes that's a god and that's out there sleeping, waiting to be woken up. And Carnage is kind of like his harbinger. I kind of think that's kind of cool. Again, it's not super scary or anything, but it does deliver on the tension and the violence for sure. And the art by Ryan Stegman is like it's definitely creepy. Like everything, it's like and this won't be down to the coloring than anything else, but like it's a lot of very like dour looking scenes, but like even the action scenes feel tense. There's a great scene where Spider-Man and Venom are in a bar, are in a diner, just like basically the exposition scene, but it's written so entertainingly well. And I'll say this, you can read Absolute Carnage number one and be perfectly fine. Like the recap cage basically tells you all you need to know.
That's good.
But yeah, that spider symbol that's on Venom's chest.
Yeah.
That's not a spider. That's a dragon. It's supposed to be a dragon.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a dragon. It's just, you know, it's appropriate. I guess it's been appropriate to be a dragon, but yeah, that's the idea.
So is that how they say dragon in his language, spider?
No, like, I don't know. But they just, like, because no, where is it? And then, like, in the Carnage one-shot that I read, you see that same symbol. And it says, we will awaken the great dragon again. So,
symbiote dragon. Yes, you heard it here, folks.
Yeah, actually, in Venom, I read the first issue of the Venom Volume 1. The final page of that, I know it's not the same book, but it's all connected. But the final page of that is that dragon symbiote popping out of the sewers of New York. And it's just like, you hear it like screech, and you just see its wings folded out. And New York's like in the backdrop. It's really cool. So yeah, like, I don't know why, but I'm intrigued by this like fucking lore that they've given the symbiotes, because it kind of makes it like, okay, it's not all just about Spider-Man Venom now. It doesn't have to be that. You got this bigger fucking bad guy that's there, and I don't know if Null's gonna show up in this series or not. Part of me thinks they're gonna save it off to where like he will wake up and that'll be another series. But who knows? But right now, the Carnage stuff is definitely intriguing enough. Like, then the second issue ends with Miles getting all turned into getting Carnage-sized. So, yeah, rest in peace, Miles.
Jesus.
Yeah, like, it's tense. It's really tense. And this is not scary, but the scariest Carnage has ever been. They somehow took a stupid character, rip-off character from the 90s, gave him... Still make, like, if you're a fan of Carnage, you're not going to hate this version. But if you weren't, say, a fan of Carnage, you may be like, oh, okay, this version of Carnage is interesting. And the little swirls that you see are null. That's basically the symbol of null.
Fair enough.
So, yeah. The ultimate end goal is to wake up null so he can wage war and destroy and return everything to black. Part of me thinks it's basically their answer to DC's Metal. That's all I fucking see. I mean, it's kind of there, but kind of not there, but it's different enough.
Interesting.
I'm really enjoying it. I'm not reading any of the tie-ins. Like, there's like a shit ton of tie-ins dealing with the other symbiotes. In the most recent issue of Venom came out too, and you don't even need to read that. You can just read this and be fine. You know, if you want an interesting Carnage story, like, part of me, like, I know it's early, but like, part of me wants Venom 2 to be this, like, where like Eddie discovers like he is not just an alien symbiote, but he's part of something a lot bigger. Because I kind of want to see Symbiote Dragon on the big screen. Just saying. but yeah, I'll give both issues a 4 out of 5. And the first issue is like 64 pages. Like, it's a monster of a book. And one of the cool things that in the book that it does is that it starts off with the Venom Spider-Man logo that's now appropriated to a dragon. And, like, as, like, the chapters go on, they split up into new chapters, more and more blood covers the page until finally the last page is all blood wow. on the dragon. So it's pretty creepy. It lives in that sort of light horror-esque, but, yeah. We're in a fucking world reality where I'm praising a Carnage book. So... take that.
Wow. Reality has taken a turn, people. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's yeah. I've been a fan of Donny Cates for a while with Doctor Strange, and his Guardians run has been fun, but like, for some reason, this is resonating with me more. I'm like, why the fuck wasn't I reading his Venom run from the beginning? But like, I just didn't care enough, but now I do. I wanna see how this plays out.
All right. Well, that's great. Yeah. You know, it's always nice when we can find value in characters we otherwise wrote off or disregarded. So, hell yeah, dude. That's rad. Okay. And, so that is now on to me. I will be reviewing House of X number 4. And I don't think we haven't touched on this series as of yet on the podcast, if I'm not mistaken. I don't recall ever having spoken about it at great length. So with that being said, I'm just going to give a little brief kind of synopsis of what's been happening with this series, because it is kind of crazy, as most Hickman things are. So basically what we have is this story, believe it or not, hinges on Moira MacTaggert, who some of you will know the name. She was Charles Xavier's longtime friend, a mutant scientist, lived on Muir Island developing, you know, further investigation into the mutant gene and things of that nature. One-time booty call. One-time booty call, indeed. So this story kind of hinges on her. And it makes one major retcon in that she herself was a mutant. However, she's not just a mutant. It's an interesting concept. Basically, she is a mutant who reincarnates into the same life over and over again. Sort of like a Groundhog Day type thing, except it starts the whole life over. When she dies, she gets brought back into the next generation, fully aware of what happened previously, and... at this point, it's brought up that she sort of sees how mutants interact with society, how they sort of are either rejected or accepted, and it's usually the rejected in this case.
So her history is that at one point she actually, very early on, tries to come up with a cure for the mutation, the X gene. And she is actually tracked down by Destiny, like legit old school Destiny with Mystique and Pyro, who calls her mother. And, you know, they basically tell her, you turned your back on your own kind. For what? For not realizing that we are the next step in human evolution. But she, and Moira, stands by the fact she thinks the mutants are a blight and it's a disease. But Destiny kind of holds that against her and is like, we're not a disease, we're people. And if you think that this is only going to be for people who want to be cured, you know, that age-old trope, you're kidding yourself. And so she gives her a message and lets her know that if she ever strays from the path again, Destiny will track her down and kill her again. And Moira believes her enough that in the next few iterations, she tries to lead the mutants down a different path. She approaches Charles Xavier and create a mutant utopia that eventually is destroyed by humans and Sentinels. She goes to Magneto then and tries to radicalize the mutant populace, but the Avengers and the X-Men both act against her and they bring him down. They do a sort of mutant commune type thing where it's way too laced by Sentinels. And so in response, in the next life, she tracks down and kills every member of the Trask family, only to realize that Sentinels and mutant killing technology happen regardless of the Trask involvement. So it's sort of a moot point. And then she goes and inevitably links up with Apocalypse and tries to, subdue humans that way. Doesn't work. So finally she says, okay, well, I've been trying this way and that way and that way. What if we try and bring that all together? And so she goes to Charles and sort of reveals to him everything she's been through. They both go to Magneto and they team up to sort of try to put together a plan for the future for the X-Men. Leads to the Krakoa nation, where all mutants will be treated as sovereign citizens of this sort of place. All mutants are accepted, and every single mutant, good, bad, regardless of what their past had been, they are all working towards a single mutant nation state. And understandably, that makes humans nervous. So a group called Orcus, who is a group of mutant-hating and mutant-fearing scientists from all sorts of government organizations, including S.H.I.E.L.D., AIM, they even name drop Hammer at one point, Hydra's in there, anything with a scientific sort of background, it's all sort of sleeper cells. They come together and they decide to build a space station out well past the view of humankind and hopefully mutant kind as well, that will build self-sustaining nanotechnology master mold sentinels that will eventually wipe out mutants. However, being that Moira has lived through, I think, like 8 or 9 lives at this point, they know about what is happening. And so they launch an attack to try and bring this space station down, the X-Men, that is. And that's sort of where this issue picks up. It's a team led by Cyclops. And you can already tell this is not going the way I think they thought. And it's you can kind of guess what the stakes are. But right off the bat, Angel and Husk both die. They're on the team. They both die immediately. As they were attempting to infiltrate the space station, like literally carve a hole into it and infiltrate it, a true believer, quote unquote, sort of detonated a bomb and blew up the port, killing Husk and Angel and lethally wounding a few, like Nightcrawler and Mystique, and Cyclops is injured as well. But they realize that, you know, they have to sort of go to bat to bring this thing down. And so it's a suicide mission, essentially. They go into the space station and they sort of take out the command structure in this organization and they destroy what should be these self-sustaining sentinels, or so they think, I should say, because at the same time, before they build this self-sustaining AI nano-control master mold, it's a mouthful, I know, they built several drones for excavating minerals and stuff from nearby planets. And these drones come and they save the master mold that was initially jettisoned into space, I think it was, or into the sun that was going to destroy it. So what we get is essentially in this issue, the X-Men all die. Cyclops, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, Jean Grey, Monet is dead, Archangel, Husk. And you may be asking yourself, well, how does that work considering all those characters are going to be in spinoff series? That is a question that I don't have the answer to because that's the latest issue.
Days of Future Present.
If I had, yeah, well, if I had to guess, it could be that this is another life that Moira's leading, because that was kind of a setup for the Powers of X miniseries running alongside the House of X main storyline. The Powers of X takes place in a far-flung future where Nimrod, the master mold, is now like omnipresent. Humans are second-class citizens integrating AI with themselves to appease the, you know, Sentinel AI, and mutants, of course, are hated and feared and hunted and exterminated. What else is new? But this story running concurrently with House of X, where it's the present day, the future story is actually a previous life, and that's how they learn about everything that happens in the future running in House of X. So it's really kind of, it's like a layer type thing. And if you know Hickman, you know that he's a big fan of his minutiae, his lore. He goes deep on this shit. He gives you timelines and gives you pages where he just explains concepts throughout the book. It's less heavy than some of his other things, like Black Monday Murders or East of West. It doesn't have that same sort of level. I think Marvel maybe kind of told him to tone it down a little bit, which I personally am fine with, honestly, because he can tell the same story regardless of how much lore he throws in. But yeah, it's interesting because these two series, you know, they're both limited series and they spin off into all these new books where we've seen these characters. So it's curious. The status quo of what this X-Men is going to be isn't settled. They haven't determined what that's going to be. And honestly, I don't see a clear path into figuring out how it's going to shake out like that. I really don't. Because as I mentioned, all the X-Men just died. But aside from that, it's the X-Men are setting themselves up as sort of being hated and feared on a global scale, because in early on when they proposed this Krakoa nation state where all mutants would get, you know, diplomatic immunity and be sovereign citizens, you have all these not just super scientists who are going against mutants, but also you have world diplomats who are now like, well, what do we do about this? Because they're basically, the mutants are leveraging these plants that grow on Krakoa that can be used for just about everything. Krakoa becomes sort of a deus ex machina a little bit. They're things that, you know, heal certain diseases and can, you know, do things like cure the sick, you know, heal the blind, all that bullshit. And they basically leverage access to these things in exchange for sovereignty and sort of being left to their own devices. And they're very upfront about it. Like, this Charles Xavier is very upfront about all that shit. And as is Magneto, they're sort of co-leading this nation. And Magneto is very upfront about the fact that we will not be, you know, he does his spiel. We will not be hated and feared and tortured and killed again. This is the line. And you can see that it's an interesting dynamic because it's turned on its head a little bit, because both him and Xavier are caring for the X-Men and what they do and how they shape mutant kind. But it's all mutual interests. You have all these characters who are working together, and it's sort of crazy to think about how, you know, they're all working on the same side now, and how they very well probably will be for the foreseeable future. So I'm interested to see how that pans out. But suffice to say, for the single issue, it's hard for me to rate it because you won't get much out of it if you haven't been reading the whole series. So, you know, bear that in mind. I thought it was a great issue, though. I thought it dealt very, very seriously with the whole suicide mission thing. You know, set up in the last issue, it is a last stand that is built to matter, and it very much sets the stage for potentially a radical turn of Charles Xavier. Whether or not that it pans out remains to be seen. You know, there's only there's six issues of this House of X. There's this issue number 4, so there's 2 more issues of that. Powers of X, that
is... Both are six-issue series.
Yeah, both are 6 issues. They're up to issue 3 of Powers of X. And there's a new issue out, one of these every week. So it's continuing on. But suffice to say, I'm intrigued, but I'm a little put off just because... And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but I'm put off because I can't tell where it's going. I really don't know how this is going to all shake out, because the status quo hasn't settled. Like I've said, there's so many different timelines at play with Moira MacTaggert's past lives that interweave, and you can even see when he lays out like timelines and stuff, he's purposely holding back one of her lives somewhere in the middle where they're not telling you what happened there, which will be a plot device at some point in the future. But yeah, so it's interesting how he's doing it. I can't tell where it's going, but at the same time, I'm okay with that. because, again, I don't think being able to telegraph the story is a bad thing. And I'm really excited to sort of see what he does with the X-Men in terms of setting up a status quo.
Let me ask this before you finish. Is this actually supposed to be part of X-Men canon?
Yes.
Yes.
See, because that actually makes me feel somewhat sad because of, you know, the whole Mara reveal, you know, going back and reliving that.
She's
one
a mutant. The fact she's a mutant.
No. I mean that she's a mutant. Why not? But what her ability is, and how many times she's done this, only to fail, only to be reborn, to go through it all and to fail again. That's soul crushing. You know what I'm saying?
It's
the state of the world, man. So we're in a very
and more so.
World.
But you know, if you work at it and you take a different tack and you get to a certain point and you think you're making it work, and then all of a sudden, oh look, there's Sentinel Mark 7's coming at you again.
Basically,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, why bother? You know,
this is basically the plot of the new Terminator movie.
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay, fair enough. But you know, I don't think I'd want to do anything after that. But I also happened to take a quick glance at this book. I didn't read the whole thing, and I'm not reading the series. But I will say that one page, the dialogue between Nightcrawler and Wolverine, I love that.
Oh,
I love
you do,
that.
Huh?
Yeah, that's well, A, because, you know, best friends. You know?
Right,
and
of course.
Even though it may not get played up too much, best friends and have been for a long time. And B, it's shit that you say just before the explosion hits.
Yeah,
fucking
pretty much.
Loved it. And, you know, the fact that Kirk can smirk while this shit is about to happen, I tip my hat. Fucking tip my hat, man. And neither of them, they're just there. They see it coming. You know, it's coming, and, fuck it. You know? Like, jeez. Yeah, I tip my hat.
Yeah. And that's moments like that are what really do me in. And, you know, I like to stick in the mud, but I love Cyclops' character. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what Hickman does with him probably more than anyone else. But, again, the Kurt and Logan moment was fantastic. And, you know, you got some more of that a couple issues ago. You had Professor Xavier and Magneto meeting up and sort of them deciding on the outset that, you know, what they're going to do, they will not compromise, and yet they're still themselves. And that's sort of something that's really sort of, you know, I think key to this, which is that Hickman is using a lot of sort of history to sort of build how, okay, well, a part didn't work. Now it has to be coming together. So what does that look like when we all come together and try to build this?
Come together. Right.
Yeah.
Now.
But yeah, I thought it was great. It's been Hickman on the words and Pepe Larraz doing the art on this one. And I love Pepe. He does a great job. Also, shout out to Marta Garcia, who does the coloring on this one. The colors really pop, even in like the vast void of space and stuff. The colors really shine through, and she did a great job on this one. They both did a great job on this one. Everyone did a great job on this one. So yeah, I give this issue 2 thumbs way up. I'll give it 3.75 feels about right. Again, I'm grading it on a curve because, as I said, you really need to be reading the whole series in order to understand anything that's been happening in this one issue. You can't just go and pick it up off the shelf. If you're reading the whole series, I give it a solid 4, probably 4.5 if I'm feeling generous. But you really have to read the whole thing to be able to pick this up off the rack. So, yeah, I mean, other than that, though, solid battle issue. Everyone has something to do. Everyone gets showcased as, like, you know, really kind of effective at what they do. And it builds stakes because, you know, regardless of the solicits that have gone out, you know, the X-Men all did just fucking die. Like, literally all of them just died. So it becomes a question of, well, what do they do now that they're all dead? Well, time to find out, and that'll be the next issue probably. But yeah, I'll leave it there for now, and that will wrap our show for this week.
Can I say something really quick about that?
Yeah, of course.
So, like, I wasn't really on board with it initially until that issue where it was revealed that Moira reincarnates, and I gotta tell you, I haven't had goosebumps reading a comic book in a long time.
And that's a really standout issue where they go through all of their lives and like,
Once I realized that was happening, I went, oh. And then basically, like, that last panel, because in the issue before, they basically have recreate that. They show at first, we're like, you know who I am. And like, well, what the fuck does that mean? And then when you read that issue and it leads, you know who I am, it has a, oh, shit, kind of moment.
That's like, what's happening in the quote-unquote most important issue in Marvel Mutants history or whatever the hell he was hyping it up as. Yeah, and I love that he doesn't hold back, neither. She doesn't stay the course like Charles Xavier would. You know, she goes to Charles, she goes to Magneto, she goes on a killing spree, she goes to Apocalypse, she tries literally everything. And, you know, it is like Taser said, it's the semblance of beating your head against the wall. You know, how long do you keep trying until you have to try something new or just give up? And that's sort of what, you know, that's sort of what ends up happening. So, you know, I'm really interested to see how she plays into it, because after that initial issue, you know, it became a matter of, okay, well, how does she affect it now that they are trying something sort of new? You know, what happens now? So I'm interested to see how it happens. And yeah, I'm rolling all the way through with this, obviously. I'm a Hickman, I'm an easy mark for Hickman stuff. So, but
yeah, you're like how I was with Morrison 10 years ago.
Yeah. Hickman hasn't burned me out yet. And, you know, thankfully so, because not only that, but East of West, his Image comic series, is going to be coming to an end soon. So I'll be jumping on.
Oh, finally.
There. Yeah, no shit. But him and Nick Jurgard are both busy doing other shit. So, but yeah, that being said, that will do it for us this time out. And we didn't say at the top of the show, shout out to John, who is, God save me, he's somewhere out there. I don't fucking know where he is.
I know where he is. He's at Burger King choking on all those Impossible Whoppers that he was supposed to let me know went on sale, and he didn't. Yeah, non letting me know that the Impossible Whopper was out. Old man, you. Dang it. It's not a bad burger, though. I will say that. I tried it.
That's the all-vegetarian one, right?
Yeah, it does, like, 90% of the job. It's just all that, right. You know, you kind of, there's a little difference, but if it was the same price, it wouldn't be much of a difference. It's $1.30-some-odd difference, so yeah, they can keep that.
Imagine if Tony Stark came back from captivity and the first burger he was offered was an Impossible Whopper. He would look at you like you were fucking crazy.
If you told him that, if you handed it to him and you didn't say shit, he wouldn't notice. I'm being
fair. Especially with, I guess, all that time in captivity, maybe with dull senses. Yeah, because anyway, know, we have responsibilities.
When ketchup,
We are on Facebook, the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a news aggregator group, which means we do what, Taser?
We steal the stories.
We don't steal. We share links and articles to stories about Marvel things from all around the interwebs. We link back to the original works. And the best part is, we'll even give you the meat of clickbaity headlines ahead of time. We won't give you any of that bullshit. We give you pure, unadulterated, good news, and you can skip all the bullshit and clickbait. We skim through all that for you. You're welcome.
Yes, because I've learned my lesson from Mike Hyde. Dang you, Mike Hyde.
Maybe he's a vigilant one, that Michael Hyde.
Damn it.
We also post our episodes there as they come out. However, you can also get a complete look at our archives at thewarriors3.wordpress.com. Complete episode archives going all the way back to, what, fucking 2012 or something like that?
11.
Fucking 11. 2011? Shit.
Even though we started in, like, 2008.
Yeah, it's true. But yeah, well, you can find our complete episode archives there. You can also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. And, you know, if you're feeling up to it, you could rate us favorably and leave a kind word and review. We'd really appreciate that. It would make our day. Personally, I'm over on Twitter at NoMrPowers. That's at NO_MR_POWERS. You can subscribe to me if you want to watch me tweet about Patriots and Tom Brady now that the season is back in full swing. I also retweet comic book stuff, so, you know, that'll be fun. Benjamin, you have stuff. What's going on in your world?
Twitter.com/MarvelousIggy. There you go.
Simple, sweet. I love it. And you, Teza, anything you want to plug?
Yes. Haley Steinfeld.
Hey, easy now.
Is she illegal?
Yes.
Did you check that to make sure you could say that joke before we signed off?
How long ago was True Grit?
Years ago?
Yeah, exactly. It's been about 10 years.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess. Yeah, she's 22, so she's legal.
Like I said. Or
fair enough.
Legal enough.
God. The difference is still disconcerting, even though we don't actually know how old you are. We just know you're fucking old.
I'm a dirty old man.
Yeah, you are. You are the Master Roshi of this podcast, suffice it to say. Okay, then. For the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast, I've been Bri. That's Taser. That's Benjamin. And until next time, what do we say to a marvelous one?
Stay marvelous.
Whew, really milked that one.
That's what the cue card said.
Come together.